Today on the show, we reunite with an old friend, ask the big question, what am I, and decide who we can trust. Welcome back to Lore Party's special coverage of the Halo television series. On this limited run of the Lore Party podcast, we'll be providing in-depth recaps of each episode of the new Paramount Plus series based on the timeless sci-fi shooter franchise. And boy, oh boy, episode two.
Here we go. Two in.
We just had a very, for those, we just had a, we had a very long discussion before we were
recording this right now.
Our pre-show notes were, it was more akin to a backroom brawl, but I think we've calmed down. I pulled the knife out of my side and I think we're all right.
we're icing up our bruises. We've shaken hands. We're going back. We're back to cordiality here. My name's Connor. Joining me again, Kevin and Jaden, how you fellas doing?
I'm doing better than John's friend was after time at the UNSC. I'll tell you what.
Oh man, yeah, lots to cover. Yeah, so we're talking episode two, Unbound, is the title of the episode of the Halo series, and well, if you haven't listened to episode one yet, Contact, the pilot of the Halo series, go back and catch up.
And I do want to say too a little bit of housekeeping. If you're wondering why we're not releasing episodes like right as the new episode airs, there's a reason for that. We want to give people at least like a week or two to digest what they've seen before they watch it. So if it seems weird that we're a couple episodes like behind when we release our, you know, episodes, it's like, well, that's because we're doing it on purpose so that people don't get spoiled.
Exactly.
Because some people don't know to watch it on the right times because it's digital media, the way that, you know, you're like, Netflix, is it released all at once, or is it once a week like the show is? All
right. So. And hopefully, if you're watching alongside us, kind of recapping with us as we drop these reaction episodes, to let us know what you think. You know, before we get too deep into this, I want to put it out there. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on the show. If you think our takes are horrible and hyper-toxic and garbage, or if you agree with us, let us know either way. You can hit us up.
That was a dig towards me, audience.
No, it was not.
It
was not. You can hit us up on Twitter at lore_party or email us, lorepartypodcast@gmail.com. Any Halo series thoughts you might have, let us hear them.
I just want to hear everybody's hot take on this show, because there's so much. Like, this is, I think, now that we're two episodes in, I have just seen a lot online, a lot of polarizing, like, viewpoints on, like, just some of it's minor stuff and some of it's, like, bigger things, you know, bigger plot points and stuff. But it's just very interesting to, like, hear what people say.
We'll get into some opinions on the beats of this episode and just sort of our overall impressions of it. But first, let's have a quick recap. Let's just walk through what we saw this time. Episode 2, Unbound, opens on a flashback.
Absolutely.
We go back a few years, I think 20-some years, to John 117 as a young adult in the Spartan program. He's, you know, maybe in his early 20s, late teens, from the looks of it. And we can tell by his surgical scars that this is post-augmentation. The Spartans have received their implants and surgeries at this point to make them more than human. And that if you've read the books, you know that shit involves stuff like bone ossification to basically graft alloys to their bones, so like they're pretty much unbreakable. You know, muscle enhancements, reflexes enhancements, organ upgrades, just all kinds of random shit that make them very hard to kill and very, very deadly.
If you survive the process,
yes,
You're very hard to kill after you're very easy to kill by the same process.
The augmentations are extremely dangerous. We'll get into that in a second here, but
think like for people who like Marvel, like think like Wolverine getting his adamantium. Like,
kind of.
You could survive that, you'll be good. If not, well, on to the next.
Pretty
person.
Much.
They don't have the benefits of healing.
Right. Yeah. These Spartans don't have the healing factor, unfortunately. But yeah, of course, John survives his augmentation, and we see him kind of get up in this barracks, and he looks around, and he notices one of the bunks is empty, and he sneaks out meet up with his friend Soren, who is another Spartan 2 program cadet, I guess, or participant. And Soren's also been augmented at this point, but Soren is attempting to escape Reach. He's trying to make a break for it and make a life for himself away from the UNSC. Now, from context, like the way they talked to each other, it looked like John apparently had agreed to leave with them before this. It was like, you know, a planned meetup, and it was like, hey, where's your stuff? You coming too? But John has changed his mind, and he even threatens to stop Soren with lethal force if he doesn't, you know, abandon his plans to go AWOL. So it's this tense standoff.
And we get a glimpse, too. We get a glimpse of, like, the programming that they do with these
big
kids,
time, yeah.
These Spartans. You know, he starts, like, spewing this, like, kind of a pre-programmed line from the UNSC, and Soren just kind of, like, finishes the sentence. And he's like, yeah, man, like, I get it. That's bullshit. I know that, too.
Yeah, I've heard all the lines. You sound exactly like Halsey. You know, it's... Soren basically just points out, like, John, they took away your free will. Just look at yourself. And, you know, Soren is kind of making the point, like, I'm still my own person. Like, I'm still a man of my own volition. I do what I want. And, you know, they've taken that from you.
And a lot of this episode, the theme of it is kind of the whole
what
loss
could
of
have
humanity
been.
And loss
right.
of self.
Freedom, self-determination.
For Spartans.
Right. Yeah.
And specifically yeah. for John.
And so, you know... John actually takes, it seems like maybe he makes a decision based on this. He exercises a little bit of free will as himself, and he decides not to immediately alert the rest of the base that Soren's escaping. He gives his old friend a 5-minute head start.
I will say, Soren immediately earned, like, love in my heart when John's just like, you've got 5 minutes before I alert the entire base to your escape. And he's like, give me 10.
And John says,
no.
Nope. You get 5.
Fine, I'll take 5. I was like, that's kind of funny, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's...
Guy goes from having a gun to in his face to be like, hey, can I... That's not fair. Come on.
The balls. Yeah, double or... Can you double it?
Yeah, double or nothing. Shut up. All right, fine.
But yeah, so Soren does escape, and, you know, we kind of come back forward into the present, where John is flying in his Condor through slipspace, which is... We kind of get, you know, our first on-screen representation of a Halo spacecraft flying through slipspace, which is pretty interesting.
Yep.
And I'll just point out really quickly in the lore, I don't think the Condor is like, I think the Condor is a new vessel kind of created for the show. It looks a lot like a Pelican though. It's based
so
on the
it's,
Pelican.
It's a beefed up super Pelican,
yeah.
Designed specifically for Spartan deployments. It's basically able to travel through slipspace, hold the massive weight of a group of Spartans in its back compartment, along with a complement of Marines. Apparently it's flown by them as well. We don't have a pilot in there to help them.
Yeah. It's just John flying himself. Yeah.
It's just John flying himself. I mean, like in other games, we had people who would fly us, like Echo.
Right. Foehammer. Yeah. All those.
Yep.
All those legends.
Rest in peace, Foehammer.
rip to a real one for sure. But no, yeah, we come back to John and Quan. They're on the Condor and they're flying to a place called the Rubble. Very, very fascinating kind of hidden asteroid city out beyond the reaches of the UNSC where Soren apparently lives now. So, you know, they show up and the Rubble is obviously a big insurrectionist hideout. Like people there, it's kind of like Madrigal. The people there aren't very UNSC friendly. And so when John shows up in his full, Spartan armor, it's a cold reception. Even when Soren shows up and, you know, there's some bad blood there.
We do need to talk about that scene because John, you know, he strolls off the ship, you know, he puts his armor on and he just sees all these soldiers are pulling the guns on him, but they don't shoot him for some reason. They decide they're going to use the Spartan's greatest weapon, a forklift.
Well, they probably...
that scene was so weird because, like, the whole time I was thinking about it, because you know how in the first episode they say, like, one Spartan's worth, like, 100 Marines, essentially?
Yeah.
So, like, them shooting at him is kind of futile, and then they drive a forklift in front of him.
And they look so goddamn proud.
So,
like, haha, he cannot defeat our impenetrable barrier.
Yeah.
And then he just like, hey, this is in my way, and then just, like, moves it real quick.
I'm guessing what's happening there is, like, let's just slow him down until the boss shows up. He'll know what to do. And also, like, laughing, like, oh, we trapped him. But, yeah, they might not know how strong Spartans are. They might just know that, like, shooting him would do no good. So maybe they are legitimately surprised. Oh, shit, he can just push a forklift around if he wants. So, yeah, that was kind of interesting.
The pacing of that scene was just so weird.
I mean,
it was a little odd.
I mean, he's only like what, like 7 feet something. Yeah. Like he's obviously. I mean, he's a beefy boy.
Yeah. I did like the way he carried himself. Like just so, like he wasn't bothered at all. Like you know, just I'm just like I'm just gonna move this for you. It's yeah. in my way. Like,
oh, hey guys, you left us yeah. here. Sorry.
But yeah, right after that, we you know, Soren shows up, and we also meet his family, his wife and kid that he's you know he's raised here on the rubble, and it's kind of a tense reunion. Soren and John, you know, seem not unhappy to see each other. It is like there's this reunion there, but obviously it's a lot of time has passed. Some water, maybe not all the way under the bridge there. But meanwhile, we cut back to Silver Team. They've been dispatched in a UNSC frigate to track John down and return him to Reach. So they're hot on his trail. Yep. And also meanwhile, we kind of go back to Reach for a minute. There's this basically this high command meeting at the base on Reach where Dr. Halsey, classic Dr. Halsey move here, kind of deftly outmaneuvers Admiral Perengoski. You know, we met her last time too, who is Halsey's superior. Basically, so Lord Hood is there. We know Lord Hood from the game, which is cool.
I was so excited when I saw Lord Hood. I was like, oh my God, he looks great. He looks like Lord Hood from the games too.
That was good casting. Yeah, very good casting there.
Which, you know, because not a lot of the characters look like their characters from the games, which is fine.
Not all of them, yeah.
It's just like, oh wow, they nailed him.
Yeah. I mean, he's no Ron Perlman. There's no replacement.
Oh, no, gosh, no.
But no, so yeah, we get Lord Hood there, who, and you know, by his title might imply Lord. He's just he's like the high admiral. He's the big cheese on Reach of UNSC High Command. And so Halsey basically like goes over Perengoski's head and tells Lord Hood directly, oh, the Cortana project might be just what we need to, you know, boost Spartan capabilities, make sure John doesn't kind of go off mission again. Like, she just sells Lord Hood on this Cortana thing, which, if you remember from last episode, Perengoski had warned Halsey.
She hated it.
Yeah, you better drop this shit. Don't pursue it any further. I'm warning you. And so, you know, it's kind of like she sells everyone at the meeting except Perengoski on this next generation AI project. And it works. Hood gives his blessing. And Perengoski is not happy at all. If looks could kill.
I thought it was really funny when she first talks to him, it's one-on-one, and then they go into the meeting, and then she brings it up. Because they're trying to figure out what to do with Chief at the meeting. They're like, well, what do we do? And then they're talking about how he's an asset and all this other stuff, and they're trying to figure out everything. But what's really funny to me is when she has the one-on-one meeting with him first before the big meeting, they're like on this area of
like
the
a balcony
building that's just like, I could just push you and you just go right away. There's like no railing. No, I'm like, where are you walking? What is this?
Safety standards do not exist in the UNSC.
It was ridiculous.
OSHA has not survived into the future.
They work on the honor system. I trust you not to push me off this balcony.
Yeah. But that's what separates us from those insurgents. They push each other.
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty much.
But back on the rubble, you know, We notice that John is surprised that Soren had a kid. He sees like a, you know, a child running around, and he looks at Soren like, I didn't know that was possible. How did you have a child? He thought it was, you know, he thought that the treatments the Spartans received, treatments with air quotes there, made it impossible to reproduce. And Soren just kind of laughs at him. Like he thinks John's being naive. Like, I can't believe you fell for that. And Soren explains that the implants they received as part of the Spartan augmentations, they stunted emotional development, and that, you know, Spartans are only kept from living a full, fulfilling life if they choose so. Like, it's kind of like a mind over matter thing. Or also, like, you can just remove some of those implants and gain your life back. He's kind of pointing out to John, like, you don't even understand how emotionally numb you are. You don't even know. Like, you don't know any better.
You know, something that I'd love to see them explore is maybe looking at Soren's kid and seeing if he has any of the abilities that, like, were passed down genetically. You know, I'd love to see, like, because I'll be honest, that's 100% why Halsey didn't. Because Halsey could have made them all sterile. But I 100% believe she was like, ooh,
that's
this
true.
Could be an experiment, like, in 40 years when I'm clearly still here and in power, because she's such a fucking vain person. She believes she'll live forever.
Yeah, I can see that too.
She does see Spartans as the next step in human evolution, so I wouldn't put that past her to think. Like,
yeah, so I could see her being like, ooh, what would happen if I made them have
sex? I think in the established lore, it's kind of like Spartans aren't sterile necessarily. It's just that they have no sex drive from their augmentations. Like, their libido's gone, basically.
I mean, it's even worse than that. Apparently, there are excerpts that says that the suit actually helps them feel relief.
Oh, no.
If you know what I mean.
I didn't even know that.
Well, we do. Yeah. Here's the thing. We learn, it gets mentioned multiple times that they have, like, this, and multiple times, not just in this scene, but in multiple scenes, even in Reach and stuff like that, how they have, you know, the parts of their suit and everything tells them, their brain, essentially to shut off. Like, they can't taste food, they can't, you know, feel specific emotions, kind of. It clouds their brain, I guess you could say, and also turns off some nerve receptors.
The way John explains it, he says that he tries to rationalize it or explain that it's a good thing by saying, oh, it's just, I don't have distractions. Like, all the things that would distract me from just surviving, accomplishing my mission, killing the enemy, all those things are switched off. They just don't contribute to my main purpose. They're distractions. But Soren is kind of like making him confront, like, that's what's been taken away from you. You're missing those things. And I'm not. That's kind of like their dichotomy.
And Soren also comments on how when they're leaving his house, when they're going to go to bed and then they're going to be leaving the house, like, John, the way he acts is still very kind of robotic.
Yes,
and that's
stiff.
One of the reasons why they can act like that is because they don't have the same types of emotions at the moment. Like, their emotions are, like, inhibited by this thing. And so, even the way his candor, the way he talks, everything is kind of robotic, and it doesn't necessarily feel human.
Right.
So that kind of brings it back to when, you know, the rebels in the first episode and stuff, they don't even know that the Spartans are human. They don't even really believe it because the way they fight and the way they act is literal robotic.
Yeah. And while that's happening, you know, while Soren and John are kind of having this back and forth and, you know, they're confronting these things, Quan is watching in horror as a new governor on Madrigal named Vincher. He's basically the pro-UNSC puppet that that UNSC installed after Quan's father was killed. And he's just tightening this brutal grip over the planet. And he's kind of doing, dictator shit and shooting people in the face, you know, just executing dissidents and all that. So Quan is obviously very disturbed watching this happen to her homeworld. So that's kind of a B-plot. I'm sure we'll visit later on.
Also, we learn that he is aligned with the UNSC now.
Yeah.
And so everything that her father really wanted to do, he's been against it the entire time. And he's been manipulating the whole planet, too. Which is like, you realize that if anything, he could be like kind of like a UNSC plant later down the line. I mean, you can see that kind of how distrusting of the UNSC even more that Quan will be. And so, like, that obviously builds up conflict and all that jazz for the story. But, like, you can just see that hatred continuously build up because when she's watching this, Soren's wife is talking to her. And she says, what do you want? You want revenge? And she says, no, I want justice. And she goes, there's a fine line between justice and revenge. And sometimes it's just a cloudy mix kind of essentially. And so then you realize that this is a lot more than just justice.
Also, meanwhile, there's some stuff happening on High Charity. We go back to the Covenant Holy City where the woman, the human looking person we saw last time. I still don't know if we can.
This show would be a lot more fun with Batman style transitions. I'm going to be honest.
I'm still not sure if we can just call her the human because I don't really know what she is yet still. They call her the Holy One. I think her name is McKee, I guess is what IMDb calls her. But McKee is talking to the Hierarchs and she discerns that the artifact that John found on Madrigal is kind of a map where it reveals the location of what they call the Ring. And the Holy One also volunteers to go retrieve it. She knows how important this artifact is. She knows how important the ring is. And any information pertaining to the ring, like the Covenant has to have it. So she's like, let me go get it. I know how important it is. But the Hierarchs turn her down. They say, no, you're too important to be risked in such a direct mission. You know, McKee just kind of, there's like exposition happening here where McKee basically reveals that the Prophet of Mercy is kind of like a parent figure to her.
Mm-hmm.
Mercy apparently took her in and quote unquote tutored her on the great journey. So that gives us a little bit more background into this person. Like she's not like a recent addition to the Covenant hierarchy. This is like, it's almost like she was raised by them is what it sounds like, which is interesting. I'm still like wary and curious how they're going to flesh this out, like where, what the hell her deal is and where she came from. So we'll see, I guess. And then, yeah, back on the rubble, Soren and John examined the artifact that John brought with him. And, you know, Soren knows a guy, and that guy is this crazy dude named Reth who lives on the rubble. And it, it is said that Reth is, you know, the rumor is he's one of the very few human beings to ever be taken aboard a Covenant vessel and then live to tell about it. So he's not right in the head. You know, God knows what the Covenant did to this guy while he was in their custody.
They served him cookies without the milk.
Oh, fuck. That's horrible.
Drove him to madness.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
As we all know it would.
They made him drink orange juice and then brush his teeth. And just absolutely unhinged shit. You can't even imagine. So they show Reth the artifact, and, you know, John goes to talk to him about it. And, you know, Reth immediately recognizes that the relic is exceedingly dangerous and important, and he knows how important it is. Maybe he saw something just like it on the ship, or he overheard the prophets talking about it, or the elites talk about it, who knows. But long story short, he's like warning John very seriously, like, do you want the Covenant to wipe out mankind? And obviously John's answer is no, and so Reth says, well, then you should destroy this artifact and then yourself. Like, it's a very line in the sand, like, this is bad news. And Reth even takes it so far as to try and smash the object, just like break it. But John stops him inadvertently by doing so. Yep. He touches it and activates the artifact again.
Which we should point out that when Reth touches it, nothing happens.
Nothing happens, right? Yeah, that's pointed out that, like,
which is a big deal if you look at the lore from the games, because in the games it was literally any human can touch this stuff and activate it.
Yes, so it's kind of a chosen one-y trope happening here, I guess.
Yes.
The way Reth puts it is that
Master Chief wasn't special enough, you gotta understand. You know, he was already a 7-foot biomechanically engineered killing machine of death, but we also need him to be the chosen one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's the way Reth puts it is like, it's kind of, it means that he's human, but more so, quote unquote. And he kind of compares John to McKee, the Holy One, the quote, the human they have with them, referring to the Covenant. So it's kind of like it's pointing out, like, some people are capable of activating Forerunner artifacts, but not all of them. It's also important to point out that activating this artifact triggered a new vision of John's childhood. We're seeing new memories of his, and it's like a little more detail. He's seeing a little bit more of people who may be his parents, who knows, like a little kid drawing, like doodling drawings and walking around with a dog and just stuff that, like,
I'm putting it up on the fridge.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Just stuff that doesn't quite fit together, but it expands on what we saw the first time. And again, like in the first episode, these visions freak John out. He's like, what the hell am I seeing? And what Reth is telling him is also freaking him out. John almost has like a breakdown. He starts screaming, like, what am I? Like, yelling at Reth, like, you know, just for, he just wants answers. Like, he's so confused. He's never been more confused.
Which I love, because Reth has the discretion of just like, I work here.
I don't know.
This is a Wendy's.
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
And
please.
And when he has this emotion, though, like, it's the first time we see him actually have, like, an explosion of emotion. It's so intense. And he sees it, he notices it. As soon as he pushes him up against the wall, he just looks at his hands and is like, what? And then, what am I doing? What's going on? And, like, that's not normal for him. So he's just kind of like, and he just, like, freaks out. Like, internally, you can see him start, like, freaking out.
He's having a crisis of identity, really. He's never been so unsure of anything in his life. He's never been so confused and misguided, or, you know, just turned about. So he's not comfortable at all. He's having a bad time. While this is happening, we go back to Reach for a minute, and there's a scene that I think, Jaden, you're not happy about either. So there's this scene where it's just Miranda Keys, who's, you know, like we discovered last time, she's a military researcher, basically, back on Reach, and she just complains to Perengoski, like, I can't believe that you're going to give the artifact to Dr. Halsey when we retrieve it from John, because yada 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 my research, yada 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 funding. Like, she's just kind of griping about how Halsey gets, like, the biggest cut of research funding.
Why does mommy get the toys? I want the toys.
That's right. I almost forgot that there's even, like, a family dynamic to this. Like,
right. That's the thing.
I forgot that Halsey's Miranda's mom. That completely slipped by me again. Yeah, it's like, she's just like, my research is so valuable. I, you know, did this and that, and it's just a lot of, you know, griping up the chain to Perengoski, your boss. And Perengoski has no time for it, no patience for it at all, just shuts her down and tells her to deal with it, basically. Just leave me alone.
Yep.
Like, stop whining and go back to work.
I've had enough manipulation for one day.
That's what she says, yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's yeah, we'll get into that later. I'll have thoughts on that later.
I have a little joke where I'm like, you know, we're going to have a countdown meter before Captain Keyes does something badass or Sergeant Johnson actually shows up, because right now I'm getting short on patience for both of those characters.
Yeah, we need a bailout soon.
Oh my god.
But like, it's close to the end of the episode. We you know, kind of come down to the climax of episode 2 here is that, you know, after his encounter with Reth and also, you know, having this crisis of identity, John sort of decides, you know, he's out of options. He doesn't know where to go. He's sort of makes the hard decision to go back to Reach because he doesn't know who else to trust. And he knows that this artifact he has that has shown him such disturbing sights that have, you know, freaked him out so thoroughly. You know, this artifact, also Reth pointed out that this artifact is important to the Covenant and that it has something to do with what they call the Ring. And so John just knows, like, we have to get answers from this thing. And, you know, that can only happen back home at Reach. So he flies back, but he convinces Soren to keep Quan safe on the rubble, which is good. So she's out of danger. We don't have to worry about the UNSC assassinating her anytime immediately soon, at least.
And also Soren kind of comments on the fact that he's going back.
Yeah.
Master Chief's just like, hey, you know, I need the Spartans. Like, I have to go. And Soren's like, oh, yeah, what do? You go back to mom.
Yes.
He essentially, Halsey's their mom.
Right.
So he's just like, yeah, you're just going to go back to mom because you can't figure it out. Yeah. And obviously that kind of bothers him because as soon as he has his little Batman temper tantrum, he's acting a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Only for while he's there, only while he's on this weird asteroid ship thing. And he's moving quickly and he's kind of like arguing, and he even yells at Soren when he's like, you know, you shouldn't have left, and just yells at him and just turns around and starts walking. And then Soren's like, you know, well, you shouldn't have stayed, and he's just like, what the hell is going on? Like, he even Soren is like, what the hell? Like, it's different for him.
Yeah, Chief is tilted now. We haven't really seen him tilted before, and he's like kind of losing his cool and acting with more emotion than we saw earlier in this episode for sure, and definitely in the last episode too. Yeah, he's changed a bit. There's something going on with him. He goes back to Reach to try and sort it out. He's hoping that by, you know, meeting with Halsey and getting some sense, making some sense out of this stuff, he might, you know, get back on track. He's sitting in this room later on when he gets back to Reach. It's like a cell, basically. They're kind of holding him in detention for now. Halsey comes to visit him, and he mentions these visions he's been seeing, which, like, I'll point out, this is a key moment that as soon as he mentions these visions, Halsey becomes very visibly nervous. Like, her expression just darkens and falls. Like, as soon as he says visions, he's like, oh shit. Like, there's an oh shit expression on her face. I think she knows that these are memories.
You can understand why. You know, standing face to face with a 7'2" killing machine that she created by stealing him from his parents.
Right.
He might be a little upset if he hears that his childhood was stolen from him.
Right. From the books and the established lore, we know that that's part of his backstory. The show hasn't explained that explicitly yet, but I think the context clues from Halsey's reaction, yes, shed light on that. I think you're right, Jaden. I think that will reveal that she's hiding something very dark about his origins and the origins of the entire Spartan program here on the series, because I think she knows these are memories, like, by her reaction. She immediately changes the subject. She's like, oh, let's not talk about that. Like, yep. Visions? What visions? What are you talking about? You're crazy.
So, yeah.
She kind of, like, sort of redirects John to...
She's like, visions? What visions? I have those all the time. I envisioned I was a good mother once.
Let's talk about Cortana.
It was scary.
She kind of sort of redirects to the artifact and what information it might reveal about, you know, the Covenant, their intentions, and also she's encouraged by this new sort of sanction from above, like, you know, Lord Hood's permission to pursue the Cortana project, and she's, you know, she ends the episode on, like, this high note of, like, oh, this is a new beginning. You know, John's back. Cortana can happen now. I have, like, you know, permission, funding, all that stuff. We have the artifact. This is a new beginning. So, you know, we'll see where that leads us in episode 3.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back after this. I'm not going to lie, the ending of the episode, to me, felt like the ending point that you would have, like, in season one of a TV show going into season two. They were like this big, you know, the big music, the big moment, and then I'm just like, no, we only had an episode, guys. You haven't earned this yet. Come on.
Yeah. I just have some scattered impressions and things I'll, like, kind of weigh in on. The things I liked about this episode, things I didn't. I will give points to just the rubble. I think it was really, really cool to see the rubble on screen because
I actually wanted to mention that because the rubble is very similar to in the books. The Kig-Yar would build asteroid bases.
Yeah.
The Jackals would build asteroid bases that were exactly, it looked exactly like that in my head, what they were. And I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The visual on that, I will not deny, looked very cool.
Yeah. I liked that. It was visually impressive. And I just liked kind of that bringing to life something from the books. The rubble is mentioned in the books as like a insurrectionist hideout that, like, that's actually human rebels making a deal with the Jackals, like the Covenant race, to have a hideout that they kind of have together. So obviously there were no Jackals on this version of the rubble on the show, but it was still pretty cool. Like,
yeah, there's a distinct lack of other aliens on the show, and it kind of makes
me
sad.
We haven't seen anything
other
than
to see some grunts.
Yeah, just,
you know me, I love grunts.
You and your grunts. Yeah, I hope we do see grunts soon. It's only been Elites so far, and the Prophets, I guess, but yeah, just I thought the rubble was cool. It gave me kind of the Expanse vibes, but there was like some Halo flair there to set it apart. So I don't know. I just liked that setting. It was a cool place to go for the second episode. I also really thought just the way they adapted Soren from the books was neat, because I think he appears in like either a comic or like a short story, or like one of the written materials where Soren 066 is his Spartan designation in the books. Originally in the established lore, he was a washout, which he wasn't quite a washout here. But for context, a washout in the lore is a Spartan who went through the augmentation process, but either died in the process or had severe like injuries and deformations and were basically crippled and mangled by the augmentations. And in the book, Soren's muscles were just fucked up royally by the surgeries, and one of his hands was kind of malformed into a pincer-like appendage, which is cool because in the show, even though he wasn't a washout technically, he was still like active duty, but before he went AWOL, the surgeries, it seemed like the augmentations made his arm kind of like he either lost it and it was replaced with I'm just like speculating, but it looked like it was like a cloned limb that they replaced his arm with. And it had like,
it kind of looked like the Terminator, when like the Terminator like rips open his hand, like, you know, to show the end, like the, you know, the skeleton.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's kind of what it looked like to me.
Right.
And then it looked like it just never healed.
Right. So yeah, that was an interesting translation from the book. You know, a nod to the established material, which is nice. And also in the book, Soren eventually tried to defect to the insurgents. You know, kind of. So yeah, it's a pretty interesting adaptation. I like that. I liked the boardroom scene. It was a very classic Halsey move to just go over Perengoski's head like that. Like, that's definitely what Halsey would do, and I like the tension there.
This show is really making me hate Halsey, and so I think they're doing a really good job with that. So
right.
I hate her so much. She's manipulative. She's terrible.
Yeah.
She's done gross and unethical things. But you know what? They got that down right.
Yeah, that's consistent. Halsey sucks in the books and games. She's kind of a hard to like character.
She's not as aloof as she is in the games, I've noticed.
Yeah.
There's less outright arrogance from her, which is a new take. Not saying it's a bad take, but I'm just like, interesting.
I agree. I expected her to be more arrogant in the show.
Yeah, there's less of like, you can't do this to me. Like, there was just more of her being like, but Admiral, please, can't you reconsider?
I will say I really like that she's more manipulative behind the scenes.
Yeah, less direct.
I think that they've expressed that she has acted like that before, and right now I think we're just seeing how, I think she realizes that this situation is really important, like with the artifact and all that stuff, and so, especially with Chief, so I think she's trying to, it seems as if she's trying to really make sure she wins this one, and so she's doing everything she can, like, in the shadows first.
Yeah, she's being subtle and savvy on the show here, which is interesting. Yeah, interesting take. Other stray thoughts. We have a really quick scene on Madrigal. We talked about Governor Vincher, played by a character actor I'm really a big fan of, like when he shows up. His name's Bern Gorman. And
he's so
yeah,
good.
He's awesome.
He's so good. I was so upset. I was like, why are we not focusing in the show or the story on him? Because he's so much more interesting than what they've done with the Covenant characters.
I want more of him.
I hate that.
I'm sure we'll get more of him, or at least I hope we do. But the thing is, like, he had a short scene here, but he made the most of it. He really capitalized on his screen time as Vincher.
I was more scared of him than I was the Covenant.
Yeah.
I mean, this dude's just standing in the middle of a desert shooting people in the face.
Yeah, he's very fun to watch as a twisted villain type. He does that kind of character very well. You might know Bern Gorman from, he was in The Dark Knight Rises. He was in Pacific Rim. He was on The Man in the High Castle. All kinds of, he shows up and he's really interesting when he shows up.
He's just been in everything, honestly. Yeah, he's one around. Of those, those character actors. That he's like Richard Kind, but terrifying.
I'll get into a couple of things I didn't like. I'll just point out that I still feel like Miranda is a pretty bland character so far from these two episodes. Like, both Miranda and Captain Keyes feel out of place to me. Like, they're not outright bad characters. They fit fine for a TV show, but there's so much in the established lore that could have inspired these TV characters more, and like, it feels like it's wasted potential, I guess. It kind of feels like to me like the showrunners knew they needed to include the two Keys characters, but weren't sure what to do with them. That's the vibe I'm getting.
Same.
I 100% agree with that fact. I mean, the fact that Keyes was in that boardroom meeting and said, like three lines?
Yeah.
And it's like, why are you here? This is a meeting of high admirals and staff. You're a captain.
I mean, yeah, it's whatever. It's just kind of like, yeah, it's like he's just there to fill space a little bit.
He's there to relay literally the first episode, he was only there to tell tell the audience that Halsey is her mother.
Basically,
that's why he was in that episode. He was
there,
and I was
there,
like,
that and to justify killing Quan, basically. That was like,
justify killing a little girl to his daughter,
shot.
Which was like, well, that's a weird take to have for this guy. All right.
It seems like they've made him the stereotypical, like, bureaucratic military character, and that he doesn't really have any power.
Which is so far off the mark.
I will say,
I don't
like what they're doing with both of them. Like, I think of, again, this is not the same thing as the games and the books and stuff, but, like, whenever I hear these characters, I cannot help but think about, like, the Halo 2 cutscene in the beginning. Like, when the Arbiter's getting, like, his shit rocked and he's becoming the Arbiter. Like, I just think of, like, the back and forth between, you know, the UNSC and then that. Like, I just keep thinking of that scene a lot, and it's, like, it's just,
I mean,
I don't know.
No, like, in the same vein of that, like, when I think of Miranda Keyes, I literally think of her flying a fucking pelican into the high charity, or not
the
high charity,
Citadel,
the building on the arc, and just slamming into the all those elites, just getting out, killing them with a shotgun, just going, Johnson, sound off! I was like,
yeah, she
it's
just,
hard, it's, see, it, that's it's her. Very hard to visually see these characters as they are right now doing acts like that, and again, this is supposed to be different, but also
these guys would feel out of place in a battlefield situation, and that's a shame because their characters are bred for battle.
And again, if you think about it, Reach is still there, so if they're going to take the timeline and say, yes, we'll have the fall of Reach, like, if they're going to do that, obviously this takes place way before that, and maybe they'll eventually become the grizzled war veterans that they are. We'll find out.
That would be really cool character development.
I mean, but to counterpoint to that, though, Keyes should already be that.
I agree.
You know, he's been in command of ships since he was like a lieutenant.
Well, in the show, he hasn't. That's we really have to keep in mind, this is different. I'm just saying, I think we can all agree that, like, they are not. Captain Keyes and Miranda Keyes are not starting at the same place that they would be from the games lore in the show. Like, they're starting at a different place. It would be really, really cool if they develop into the badasses that we know and love from the established lore. But what we're getting right now is basically just, like, B-plot stand-ins to just move things along and not really.
Yep. I will counterpoint with this, Connor. Like, you know, it's that classic Ship of Theseus thing where it's like, how far do we have to go for these characters to not be the characters that we know? You know, how much do you remove from these characters before they're totally different creatures?
That's what I'm saying. It's like they have the names of characters we know, but they aren't acting like the characters we know. So there's a disconnect. Yeah. And like again, it's an adaptation.
So make a new character. That's my issue.
Honestly, yeah, they could have just made new characters to do this to be these characters. If they had,
Captain Keyes was in season two, and then like Miranda was in season three.
Yeah, that would
be like, oh, okay,
that would have made sense.
This is great.
That would have made sense
because they had to get that name recognition.
Yeah.
And again, they fucked up by not putting the one character that makes sense to be in an active war zone.
Johnson. Well,
Johnson.
Well,
just have Johnson.
That's the thing.
Man.
There's not much fighting happening now, so like it would be a huge waste of having Johnson around. So like maybe they're waiting until shit really kicks off and like, you know, bodies start dropping for Johnson to show up. I hope so. I have hopes, but like I have
Johnson watch right now.
On Johnson watch.
Two episodes in, no Johnson. I'm on Johnson watch. It's my favorite character.
One last thing on Keyes is just we've beaten this into the ground of like Keyes' whole deal and what's why is he there. I found it annoying that during that meeting he contradicted himself. He was like, he said early on, what good is a superhuman we can't control? And then like when Halsey suggests that Cortana can keep Spartans from, you know, going off mission and thinking independently, suddenly his tune changes. He's like, but John's a human being. You can't just control him like that. So it's like, dude, which fucking one is it? Like,
I'll tell you what happened. There was an extra on set who was supposed to say that line, but he got explosive diarrhea. Right and they'd already been filming for 12 hours. They said, you know what? Fuck it. Does one of you want to say it? And the guy happened to be sitting next to Captain Keyes when they shot that scene, so they're like, fuck it, we're just going to tighten in on him, and he's going to say it, and then we're good.
Yeah, and
that's why they were all filmed from the waist down, because one of them had the brown pants on.
So yeah, there's...
That's the only way that I can explain why there was a sudden brain shift in the same character.
That's as good an explanation as any. I don't know. There's inconsistency there that sort of bugged me, but oh well. It's kind of
Look, minor. I really, really get what they're doing with the whole finding your humanity again, like with Chief and stuff.
Yeah, I like it. I like that.
I really get it. I really like it. I think the whole thing with, you know, when he, the more he touches that artifact, the longer it like basically gets rid of these inhibitors that are making him not human, you know? Mm-hmm. And because, you know, by the time he gets back to the UNSC, by the time he gets back to Reach, he's kind of more robotic again. And I mean, throughout the episode, we see, he said, you know, in the beginning, Quan's like, why didn't you kill me? He goes, would you want to kill a kid? And she's like, no. And he goes, why? And she says, because it's wrong. He goes, and that's what I was thinking. And then he kind of like continuously shows little bits of a humanity aspect that are like poking out. Well, and I really think for the first episode, for him to take that helmet off is when that's the journey. Like that's the start for him. And I love that. Like I'm really going to say it. I was very over the fence. I know I said in the last episode, I was really over the fence with him taking his helmet off, man. But for the story, if you look at it in this lens, it makes perfect sense. Now, granted, he's walking around, the whole episode, he's walking around the whole episode in the rubble without a helmet on. And
he was out of his armor.
Everybody was just pointing guns at you. The fuck are you doing? Leave your helmet on for safety reasons.
He was out of his armor.
In that aspect, no. It really did not fit the story for me whatsoever when he did that, but
they needed to make him seem relaxed. That's why.
I think that's kind of the whole thing.
But also, I thought he couldn't take the armor off without like the cradle thing.
Yeah, I thought like you needed machinery to do that for you.
Like that was the whole crazy.
That's what I thought.
Why the hell did they? Yeah, like
I don't know.
I mean, maybe they have one. You know,
who knows? Maybe he built one.
But that makes
I don't know.
But I would have loved to have seen that. I would love to have seen like a shitty version of the de-armorer.
Yeah.
It just. I get it. I understand the whole.
He trusted the terrorists in air quotes.
I know. Yeah.
Quickly,
yeah.
I think.
I like though that throughout the episode they kind of show bits and pieces of him like awakening, if you will. I think the Batman part where he has an explosive emotion and is just literally like,
"What am I?
Who am I?" You know, like what? I was like, "Bro, chill." But I get why it was such an explosive emotion, because he hasn't had emotions in a long time. Think Anakin Skywalker. Somebody been told you can't have emotions, and now he has them, and they're all
doesn't
over
know
the
how
place.
To regulate them. Yeah.
So, like, I get that. Like, imagine not having emotions for such a long time, and then having them, you have no idea how to socially act. Like, this guy has no social cues or skills or anything, and you know, very, very minimal. And in military fashion, he's told what to do. He doesn't really have a say. And so I think that him expressing himself for the first time, it was jarring. Like, it really was. He was terrified of himself because he didn't know what he was doing. And he, you could see him progressively throughout that interaction. In that scene, he gets more and more agitated. And, like, even when he walks in the room, he's kind of being a dick. Like, not like a military robotic guy. He's just being kind of a prick. And, you know, they're like, do you kill Covenant? And he's just like, yeah. Like, duh. Like, what's wrong with you? Aren't you an idiot? Like, he's just kind of being a jerk. And then Soren just, like, kind of calls him out on that shit. And one thing that really stood out to me that obviously was supposed to is when he meets Soren's son and Soren's kid, like, gives him that little smiley face stamp. And that's kind of like his, it's a representation of his innocence as a child coming out. And so he, obviously he's like, what does this mean? And he's being stupid. And like, Soren explains it to him. That's like, you know, oh, this is him trying to say that, like, you know, you fight for him and everybody. And like, he trusts you and all blah, 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 blah. And so he leans down. He's like, thank you. I accept. And it's, so stupid, and then Soren makes fun of him. He's like, bro, what the fuck? Like, talk to him like a normal person. And I liked the fact that when he gets to the end of the episode, he's talking to Halsey and he just looks at his hand and he like, she's like, why did you do this? And he just kind of like in his brain, he's like, I realize I'm fighting for more than just me and more than just the UNSC. Like, first off, I'm fighting more than just the UNNC, but I'm also fighting for myself and more for myself and other people. And he's kind of like thinking like crazy. And then it pans because she takes his other hand off of that hand and she's like kind of tearing up, but like I think she's just stupid excited, but she grabs his hand and like diverts his attention away from that like thought process toward her and then back to like the UNSC and the Spartan program like brain standard.
She's just really horny for the science she's about to do
pretty much. But like I just think that the whole way they've been doing this, I will say I like this episode more than the first episode. I think because of that, because I think they used, I'm getting into my film brain here, I think they used cinematography really well to showcase this. I think his act, dude, he's fucking great. I think he's a great actor and I think he's doing a good job for what he's been given. I think he's doing a great job. So sorry for the rant, but I'm liking Pablo Schreiber.
No, I agree
a lot. I've always liked him, and I think he's kicking fucking ass.
No, I agree. That's one of the things I like about this episode too. Like we get more nuance from him. He's really exploring the dichotomy of how he is most of the time, where you know Pablo Schreiber is portraying John as this just stiff, blank, you know, robotic character, and like he on screen he carries himself exactly like I would imagine an emotionally stunted slab of granite like Master Chief would act. So like, but he also kind of contrasts that with, you know, like you mentioned, Kevin, the outburst later, like he's having emotions for like the first time in forever. And so, yeah, I think he's really leaning into the contrast of, you know, how he normally is, which is dead inside basically. And these new waves of emotion that he doesn't know what to do with. I like how he's handling that. I think his performance is very impressive so far. That's one of the things I like. I guess I'll put one more thing out there that I'm not sure it's even... I'm totally out of pocket on this. Like, this probably makes no sense. But near the end, near the end of the episode, we get back to High Charity, and McKee, the Holy One, starts undressing. You know, she's taking her clothes off. And, human woman, you know, just naked. Like, I'm just saying that so, like... She doesn't take her dress off and has tentacles or scales or anything. We confirm she's just a normal human person, and like has scar tissue on her back, but that the camera seems to close in on, you know, to make a note of. And I'm just thinking to myself that's going to be significant later. And the only thing I could really connect that to is at the very beginning of the episode where the camera focuses on John's augmentation scars. And I know I'm making a leap here, but I just can't help but wonder, am I crazy to think that those might be connected? Like her scars on her back and the scars on John's back, you know, kind of bookending the episode a little bit. I'm just, you know, it was just something I noticed. I'm not sure what to make of that yet, but it's something I noticed.
So here's the part that this actually caused a lot of controversy in our pre-production.
These were fighting words.
Oh boy, here we go.
I have to say it because it's, I hate it. I have seen some theories online as to what her scarring is, and I hope to God, I need to say this because Connor got really mad at me because he thought I believed it. I hope to God these are not true, but I have seen rumors online saying that those scars are very similar to the ones that the Arbiter received in Halo 2 after he had his penance. And so there are rumors and theories that she might be the Arbiter this TV series.
Now hold on. Before anybody says anything, before you guys start going at it again, Jaden is feeling that this is more likely to occur, where Connor does not think it would occur. So
don't do that. Don't put words in my mouth. I'm saying that I have seen these. I have seen these theories, and I do not like them. I do not support them, but I do see how they are plausible.
Exactly. You would not be surprised if it happened, whereas Connor
yes,
would
be. Yes, that does not mean that I like them. Do not put that on me. Do not put that evil on me.
We hate this theory equally. We equally think it's dumb. I'm just of the opinion that the writers of this show are not that tone deaf and ignorant. There's no way.
And I am of the opinion that Hollywood is absolutely dumb enough to do this theory. And I'm taking it a step further. If this theory is to be believed, what's to stop them from doing a love triangle between this woman, Chief, and Cortana? Because they've been up on the family drama way more than I expected for Halo already. So I could see
that
being a thing. And man, do I hope that I am wrong, because that is a terrible, terrible thing to happen on a show like this.
There's so many things that could go horribly, catastrophically wrong with the characterization and the plots of this series that, like, I don't think it's worth even thinking about how bad it could go. It's just kind of like, I'm just going to take it one episode at a time, see where it goes. I agree that, like, there's been, like, the B plots have been boring. Like, just the drama on Reach, Miranda and Captain Keyes kind of feeling, like, out of place and not really serving a purpose yet. That stuff, like, is dragging the series down a little bit for me, but there are still high points that are kind of lifting it up a little bit. Like, there's things to enjoy. Like, two episodes in, my overall opinion of this show at this point is just, it's still a mixed bag for me. It's not really entirely one way or the other. I'm enjoying some parts of it, not loving all of it. But just on this episode in particular, I'll just reiterate, I love that they're leaning into John's identity crisis. I thought the stuff with Soren and the rubble was really compelling. I will just say I really hope they turn up the heat in the next episode, though. Like, there's a lack of action here, and I would hate to see the series kind of lose steam this early on. Like, they need to kick things up a notch in the next episode, is what I'll say.
I would agree with that. I really do like the whole John's humanity, and I like the metaphors they're using. I think they're doing a good job with that. I think the CG is definitely better in this episode than before.
It's been hit or miss for me, man. I'm like,
yeah,
ugh.
I think production quality has been okay. It still does feel a little bit of a fan movie style kind of thing. I think his armor doesn't look like metal, if that makes sense. I love the sound design. I know all three of us were in agreement earlier. The sound design legit. Like, it's really good.
Yep.
I think taking characters from the books, like Soren and stuff, I thought that was pretty cool. That they were acknowledging, like, the existence of these characters and trying to bring them into the world, which I thought was cool. I am very nervous about this Daenerys Targaryen style person that Jaden keeps referencing.
Discount Daenerys Targaryen. Yeah. That's what I'm calling her until proven otherwise.
I'm worried about her storyline. I'd like to know more. Because let me tell you, Game of Thrones didn't end very great. So, you know, just now I'm getting nervous. But yeah, so I'm having fun with it still. Like, I'm still having fun. I watched the first episode once, and I've watched the second episode twice. So, I enjoyed it, and I think seeing some of the technology again on screen that we've, you know, had in games is really cool. And again, I think they're doing Halsey, like, they're doing a great job with her, because I hate her guts, and that's the whole point. So, props.
Here's what I'm just gonna say. I think that It's going to sound so weird because I think they're focusing too much on the humanity aspect of the show versus the actual like world play that they could be going with, because like the stuff that doesn't involve like Halsey and her weird dick measuring contest with her own daughter and Captain Keyes being there, like that stuff is boring. But like when Madrigal is being taken over by a dictator, I'm like, oh, I'm interested in that. When the Covenant's like attacking, you know, the planet and murdering people, I'm like, okay, I'm interested in this. I guess the more simple parts of the show, they seem to be afraid to go with in favor of the human stuff. It's like someone that was like really excited to explore the characters, and I just wish that they would, I don't know, focus on more of the world saving aspect of the show. If that makes sense. I'm waiting for more. And again, I know you guys hit me with the, well, this is a different Halo, so shut up, nerd. I get it. I understand. But I'm also like, I came to this expecting like to see Master Chief kill a bunch of Covenant. I want more of that. And I'm waiting for more of that. I think they're wasting too much. Like every minute they spend on Keyes telling his daughter to kill a child, there's time where Chief could be like fighting a Covenant soldier, you know? And I'm like, I kind of want to see that more than asking if you're telling your daughter to be okay with child murder, because that was a weird, I can't get over that. I'm sorry. That's the weirdest thing in the world that they thought we would be like, yep, that makes sense.
I don't think they thought we would do that though. I think the audience is supposed to know that was bad. Like, I don't think the audience was supposed to be sold on, oh yeah, Keyes is right, it's fine to kill her.
I know, but it's just so weird, man. Like, have Halsey say that. Have Ferengoski say that.
Yeah, okay, I'm with you there. It's like...
Like Keyes even talks in the books, like, where he feels like he always feels guilty about taking Halsey on those trips to meet those kids. And I don't think it was ever implied that he knows exactly what happened to them, but, like, he knows, you know?
Yeah, he had suspicions.
They never straight up were like, oh, yeah, we kidnapped those fucking kids. But he was always like, it's kind of weird they made me take this doctor lady across the galaxy looking at kids.
So, yeah, like, Keyes is being misused. There's not enough action. I think that we can both agree on that. Like, yeah, they're the minutiae of humans doing stuff, kind of making up the bulk of this episode, made me want more aliens getting shot. Like, I'm with you 100% on that. Like, that's why I said, like, I hope in the next episode they really turn up the heat, more action. I want action. Give me action. You know, I want
shooting. The pew-pew, man. I want the boom-boom.
I want the bang-bang and the zap-zap.
Exactly.
Zap.
The pew-pews that we saw, yeah. I liked. I was like, me too. This is pretty good. There was a couple of things that were weird, like when the AR got thrown and it was a CG thing for some reason. That was weird.
I really think that, you know, what do I play Halo for? It's the boom-boom, the zappy-zap, the pew-pew, like... That's what I'm playing it for mostly. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I'd like a little bit more combat to be.
I mean, I was gonna say, I'd argue that Halo is not like Halo. The game does a great job of exploring John's humanity while also having fun set pieces and, you know, explosive action. I just feel like this translation has not gotten me there yet, and I'm giving it another chance. I think I told you guys before. I'm dragging a little bit. I'm like, man, this is a little, it's like someone's telling me about this great game Halo that they've played. And I'm like, man, this is a lot of boardrooms and discussions.
So far, I feel like they are trying to do some world building, but I think they're lacking, like, maybe give an extra 10 minutes, the first episode, and maybe 5 minutes in this episode, a little bit extra world building. Then I can understand the lack of combat.
Like, literally a Halo Wars style montage of them being like, we are at war with the Covenant. Like, have them, like, blowing up some buildings and glassing planets. You know, like, literally launch the show with that, and then I'm in. I'm like, all right, here we go. Like, this stuff, like, because then you're more connected with the world and, like, why these harsh decisions are being made.
Yeah, like...
Because I just feel like they're not... They haven't gotten me there yet, man. Like, if you show me, like, hey, humanity is losing this war so fucking badly... They're okay with killing kids in order to preserve the freedom that they're trying to. I'd be like, okay, yep, that's harsh, but we got to do it. And that's where I'm like, I don't know who this show is made for, because like me as a longtime Halo fan, I know how desperate things are in the universe. But if you're like brand new and you're just like, oh look, there's a cool guy in armor. I'm watching The Mandalorian, but on Paramount Plus, you don't know that yet.
You know? I just kind of feel like they haven't set the stakes very well. Like, they haven't, like...
Exactly. Like, you don't know that, because they're just like, we're at war with the Covenant. It's like, how bad is it?
Yeah, you're not really showing us this war. You're just kind of showing us, like, one tiny part of it.
Like, literally, like, all they had to do was show a planet getting destroyed by the Covenant by High Charity. You know, just have them give me the first episode, like, hey, the conquest of planet 6478 is going good. It's like, they always go good. We're the Covenant. We're so good at killing humans. It's great.
Well,
yeah.
I'd have been like, okay, cool. Now I know what we're up against here.
Well, I think that we've only got two episodes in so far, but I think I have a feeling the next two episodes are going to be a lot more.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Well, that about wraps it up. We hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. And be sure to connect with us on Twitch, Instagram, and Twitter at lore_party. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.